Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, presidents of the resorts respond to the new guidelines. Annual pass changes could be coming.
Buena Vista Street is reopening. We talked to former Jungle Cruise skipper Vetter and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Welcome to DL Weekly, a podcast about Walt's original Magic Kingdom, Disneyland. We cover the latest news and information from the resort, test our skills at trivia, and have a discussion about the parks every week. We invite you to send in your feedback and stories. Our contact information can be found at dlweekly.net. Now sit back, keep your hands and arms inside the podcast, and enjoy this week's show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of October 28th, 2020. I'm Teresa Urban.
It is almost Halloween. I cannot believe it. And I'm Tag Bushman. We'd like to send a shout out and a big thank you to Madison M., Will F., and Lee S., who increased his support this week. This support helps make DL Weekly possible. Without the community of support, we would not be able to do the show every week and get through this difficult time. The supporter Discord chat is a great source of Disney magic from our supporters, like themed topic days. Also, we have movie nights. This last week, we did The Nightmare Before Christmas. Coming up on November 1st, we are going to do Coco. So if you're interested in that, become a supporter. Head on over to dlweekly.net/support to sign up.
Well, if you're looking to add a little bit of magic to your wardrobe, now is a great time to check out our DL Weekly store. From now until Friday, October 30th, our store is having a great sale. Plus, t-shirts start at just $13. We've got a couple different Halloween logos in there right now, plus our normal podcast logo. Like I said, there's t-shirts. You can get sweatshirts, long-sleeve shirts, mugs, backpacks. But I think there's even like canvas bags, maybe even blankets and stickers. You name it. There's all sorts of goods.
Oh, yeah.
Head on over to dlweekly.net/store to check it out.
Yeah, and not for this sale, but probably coming up towards the end of November, we'll have our holiday-themed logo, holiday/winter-themed logo. So check that out as well. Well, our friends over at All Enchanting Ears have been busy. They have three different ones for the Haunted Mansion here. So one of them has the two duelers on the one side and the stretching room portraits on the other. The next one has also some stretching room portraits with the hitchhiking ghosts. And then, of course, there's the bride with the hatbox ghost.
Yeah, so this fabric is basically all sorts of different Haunted Mansion themes. So you kind of, it's kind of a surprise as to which theme you'll get. But they're all amazing, so they're all good. Mine have part of the stretching room on it, but then also, of course, our friends, the hitchhiking ghosts. But yes, the bow is amazing. It's got some sort of, it's like velvety. It's so soft. Same thing with the backside of the ears. Awesome. Super awesome.
Ears aren't the only thing that they make. They also make ear holders, straw toppers, lithophanes, and more. They're offering a special for a discount code for All Weekly Tiers. Use the code DLWEEKLY10 for 10% off your entire order. Head on over to allenchantingears.com to check them out.
Now let's get to the news. Well, the California Attractions and Parks Association, an organization that represents amusement parks and attractions throughout California, streamed reactions from the big theme park operators last week. Ken Potrock, president of the Disneyland Resort, Kurt Stocks, president of Legoland California, Karen Irwin, president and COO of Universal Studios Hollywood, and Rafi Caperlin, regional vice president for Cedar Fair, which operates Knott's Berry Farm, were all on the stream. Great points were made by each of them, such as local residents might be traveling out of state to go to theme parks since local ones aren't opening, potentially helping with the helping spread COVID-19. Overall, the group of theme park leaders were not happy.
So this is definitely, we'll have the link in our show notes. It is on Facebook. You can go rewatch it. It's very interesting because for us, I only know Ken Potrock, and I only barely know Ken Potrock because he just became the president recently. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting to see these other folks from Legoland, from Universal, from Cedar Fair, all on there talking about what their reactions to things were and why they thought it was unfair, and they kind of went into some things. They did have some questions towards the end from local media that was able to ask things, and so There's a lot of kind of good insight there. So if you guys are interested in hearing more about that and to hear more of their reactions and everything, go to the link in our show notes at dlweekly.net, and you can watch that stream. It's about 40 minutes, 50 minutes, something like that, but it's definitely worth it, I think.
I just thought it was interesting seeing all of these, all of the big theme park, like, heads all kind of sitting at the table, virtually, of course, and discussing this together, because usually it's always very focused. You either hear from specifically like Disneyland, Universal, whatever, they all make their separate statements. So it was really kind of neat to see them all come together, which makes me kind of question if they aren't coming together on some other things as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely seemed like they're coming together to kind of have a united front, because they're all affected by this. Something that came out later today, and I don't want to get too far into, Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, came out today, and he was kind of talking about the feedback. Some of the reporters asked him about Disneyland in particular. He kind of refused to say Disneyland. He's like, I know that there's one in particular people are talking about. So that's kind of weird that he's trying to, like, I don't know, skirt around talking about Disneyland specifically. It's just kind of, I don't know. I think that something definitely is going to happen. I just don't know what. We'll have to see what happens, I guess. Well, the Orange County Register reported this week that the Southern California theme parks are considering legal action to gain permission to reopen, or at the very least, change the guidelines for reopening. The parks at least want to be able to open in Tier 3 instead of waiting for Tier 4.
Yeah, so this is kind of so we kind of had been thinking for a little while that perhaps Disney was building a legal case against the state regarding the reopening guidelines. But after seeing all of the heads of the major theme parks coming together for that united front that we just talked about in our last story, it really made me start to wonder if perhaps all of the theme parks would be coming together to build a legal case against the state instead of each theme park. So Universal, Knott's, you know, each one doing it individually. So I'm curious. I feel like it's a little bit of, nothing's for certain yet. None of the theme parks have like come out and announced, yes, we are building a case, yes, this is what we're doing. But it's really starting to feel that way.
Yeah, it's important to know that they haven't said anything, but I have to imagine there's been a lot of people in our chat who have been talking about this too, that really this is just kind of unfair to this segment. We talked at length about this last week, that it seemed like that this is very unfair to this particular segment of the economy being theme parks. And like we said in the story before as well, that people are leaving the state to go, you know, they're going to Vegas where things are not as strict. And so it's not like things are going to not come back into California.
Disneyland sent an email out to annual pass holders discussing the reopening guidelines that were announced last week. The email went on to mention that they are not sure what that means for the annual pass holder program. They finished saying that they will be in touch soon when they can share more details. So kind of cryptic, really, kind of cryptic. And it really ties into our next story.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen. I also read this email and I was like, what? I found it hard to understand what the point of the email was, because it was kind of like, we might be doing something, but we're not really sure. We'll let you know.
Yeah, it was cryptic.
You didn't get one.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, too. I feel that there's just a problem across the board, is that a lot of annual pass holders, in our chat even too, I didn't get one of these emails, and a lot of the people in our supporter chat also said that they didn't get these emails. So it's a little strange that the mailing list seems to be a little wonky, but I feel like there's been other ones that I have.
Yours also expired
either.
Technically,
right? Mine's technically expired too, so I don't know if that has something to do with it. But anyways, it was just very curious timing, because this email came out after Disney made another big announcement regarding one of their other parks.
Yeah, so Tokyo Disneyland is a huge annual pass holder park, just like Disneyland. This week, Tokyo Disneyland ended their annual pass holder program and refunded the balance to pass holders. Could this be something that Disneyland will do when it eventually reopens? That is the big question, right?
Hence why everybody was very, very curious and very confused when they were getting this kind of cryptic email from the Disneyland AP.
Yeah. What do you think? Do you think that this is something that they're going to change?
I think it makes sense. And as much as I don't want it to happen, I think it makes sense, because think of it this way. But it makes sense and it doesn't make sense, because I feel like Disney has already given annual pass holders options. So right now, as an annual pass holder, you can ask, if you've paid in full, you can ask for a refund, and they'll refund you since the time the parks have been closed, or you can wait. So basically you can get a partial refund, or if you want to wait till the parks reopen, they have said that they will extend your pass. And I'm curious what that's going to be, because originally it was they were going to extend your pass the length of time the park had been closed. Well, it's been months and months now, and it looks like it's probably going to be months and months more. So I don't know what the extension's going to look like at this point. But I feel like if they just refunded everybody, it's a clean slate for Disney. They don't have to try and figure it out. The other thing, too, is then there isn't the guilt of, because we know that there's going to be reservations required. We know that. But how fair is it if you're an annual pass holder and you keep trying to get reservations and they're booked, so you can't get reservations, right. So you're not able to use your pass. So, and I think that's what the problem was at Tokyo, was people weren't able to get reservations to be able to go in and use their pass. And I think they were having a little, some people that weren't so happy about that, which I understand.
What's really interesting to me is that I feel like this whole situation, well, how do I say this in the way that I mean? Disney kind of got lucky in a way, because a lot of the things outside of the scope of just the annual pass holder, they had technology set up to do a lot of the things that they've done. Mobile
sure.
ordering.
Yeah, yeah.
That was great that they already had a mobile ordering system set up for Disney World, because they just expanded it. Can you imagine if like none of that was there?
Right.
That would be really interesting.
For sure.
So I feel like Disney is doing stuff that they were going to do anyway, mm-hmm. but COVID has kind of sped it up. So yep. I think the annual pass program, this is their golden opportunity to cut that down and could start from scratch,
right.
and say, okay, when we do start offering annual passes again, it's not going to be like it was before.
Right.
Which we talked about at length when the Flex Pass came out, and since then, that going forward, when they've done this reservation thing like they did mm-hmm. for the Flex Pass, I think that's how all the passes are going to be going forward.
I think so, too.
And I think that this is a great time for Disney to be like, well, if we get everybody off of these plans that are grandfathered in and we just start over,
right.
then people can't complain or say that there's a breach of contract or any of that stuff, and just be done with it. And I think that they had been preparing for something like this for a while. And it's interesting to me that they would rather have stayed open and made a lot of money, but this kind of logistically makes it a little easier for them to tweak things.
Right. I think so, too. Well, the other thing, too, that some problems are not necessarily a problem, but some things that are happening in Disney World that we actually experienced when we visited. So they had, right, so you've got a capacity, and they kind of divvy that out to say this many spots are reserved for the annual pass holders,
yep.
and this many spots are reserved for ticketed guests.
They did that at Disney World.
Yep. So they were having issues, though, where one of those groups would fill up all the spots and the other one wouldn't. I believe it was the ticketed guests was not filling up their
Correct.
Number of spaces, but the APs were full. So then they had to kind of keep rebalancing that out. So then they'd, okay, well, we'll take some ticketed spots away to give back to the annual pass holder. So it's been this kind of balancing act for them there. So I'm
yeah.
sure that's not super easy to manage. And it would just, I can understand how it would be much more easier for them to manage with reduced capacity to just not have to worry about balancing annual pass holders with the ticketed holders and just suspending the program for now. And then again, when it does come back, I do think we are going to see a revamped program for sure.
One interesting thing I saw online today was a suggestion of a way you could have like a premium pass like before. So before, you'd have the premium pass, you'd go every day of the year.
Yeah.
Sometimes it include parking, no restrictions, no blackouts. One of the ways that they thought that you could still do something but still manage crowd levels is your premium pass could be you get 20 days a year
yeah.
and you can go whenever you want, but you only have the 20 days. And I think that that's a good thing, because I feel like, somebody else I think brought up in the chat earlier, or maybe it was one of the comments on one of the articles I was reading, said that one of the problems was they raised the passes of the prices. So then people started going more to get more value
exactly.
for their money.
Yep, exactly.
So raising the price wasn't cutting the amount of people. So it'll just be really interesting to see how this works out. Honestly, I'm okay with anything. In fact, Mice Chat did a poll
mm-hmm.
and they asked people that are annual pass holders, they said, like, what do you think? And most people would be okay with them getting rid of the program and revamping it.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, I didn't expect that. But I think that pass holders are also frustrated with how crowded the parks and stuff
yeah.
have become. So And I think we're all in this weird time where we want people to get back to work and we want Disney to be making money so we can get back to how things were. And so I think by sacrificing the I paid this one price and go in all the time to I'll buy, you know, 4-day park hoppers like everybody else, I think that's a little more easy for people to digest right now.
Well, and really, I think people just want to get back to the parks. They don't, you know, it's getting to the point that we don't really care what it looks like. Just please let us in.
Yeah.
And we don't really care how to get in. We just want to do it, you know. So I think people are definitely able to do more. But so just to kind of reiterate, we don't think that the annual pass holder program is coming to an end indefinitely and it'll never come back. We just think that it's very likely that Disney is going to be putting a pause to the annual passes until things get back more to normal. I don't know if that's back to when the parks are full capacity or when exactly they're going to reinstate it, but I do believe it will be reinstated and just look different.
I got to say, though, I'm very sad because I was just on the cusp of becoming an annual pass member again. And Teresa just started doing hers.
My first ever annual pass, and I didn't even get to use it for the full term.
That's all right. That's all right.
Okay. I can just frame my little card.
That's true. You might have one of the last ones, maybe.
They could come out with a... Well, they have come out with a new design since I got my card. There you go. So who knows what the next one's going to look like. Beginning in November, speaking of getting into the parks, Buena Vista Street will be open for shopping and dining. Disney is considering this as an expansion to Downtown Disney. All the stores on Buena Vista Street will be open, including Elias & Company, Julius Cats & Sons, Kingswell Camera Shop, and Trolley Treats. The Fiddler, Pfeiffer, and Practical Cafe, Carthay Circle Lounge, and Smoke Jumpers Grill will also be open for dining. I heard that they're going to have some like vendor carts as well.
Yeah.
So you could probably get like a true Disneyland churro.
That's true.
True DCA churro.
Sure. You know, theme park churro. I was surprised that Smoke Jumpers was on this, although it does make sense because it is kind of right there. It is just a little bit, you know, Buena Vista Street adjacent, I suppose. Yeah. I am interested because I have heard rumors back and forth whether this means or doesn't mean or if they plan to or don't plan to open Main Street at some point. And we talked about this a little bit last week or maybe on the stream. We talked a little bit about the fact that they're like ADA compliance and stuff like that.
Yeah, so I think it makes a lot of sense for it to be Buena Vista Street that's opening first. I think even way back when the parks closed, we were talking about when the parks reopened, how we felt DCA would probably be the first park to open just because they built DCA to handle crowds better than Disneyland, just because obviously Disneyland was built quite a while ago.
Yeah.
So the other thing too that actually Chrysanthi brought up in our chat that was a very good point is DCA is also much more ADA compliant than Disneyland is, just again because of the time that it was built. So it makes a lot of sense for them to try this out and test the waters with DCA. Now, does this possibly mean maybe we get some sort of food festival in the future? I sure hope so, but as of right now, we just get extended shopping and dining, which that is all right with me.
Yeah, I am excited for this to be open. I'm excited to see people inside one of the parks again. I do want Main Street to open. There's something about Main Street, but I get it. Like, I'm just glad something.
Yes, I'm glad that they're letting us like into the parks. Now, the next thing, Tag and I were talking about this. The next thing I'm curious is how they're going to make sure that guests don't sneak past the magical lines that they're not supposed to go over and like sneak over to, I don't know, Pixar Pier or something, you know, because Tag's like, well, nothing, you know, you said, well, nothing's going to be open. I said, yeah, but if you could just like take a stroll around an empty park, wouldn't you want to do that? That would be so amazing.
I think they're just going to put up those refurbishment walls.
I think so too. I think so too. Because we were talking about, do they staff like people? You know, so it'll be interesting to see how they kind of make sure people aren't going in areas that they shouldn't be going. Yeah. However, I'm more excited not only to like know that the Disney park is the gates are open partially, but this next story warms my heart even more.
With the reopening of Buena Vista Street, cast members have been called back to work, ending their furlough. However, others got messages from Disney that the furloughs have become layoffs. Over 200 cast members will be returning to work on Buena Vista Street, starting COVID training on November 1st.
I'm excited that we get to go into a little further into the Disney bubble, but more importantly, when they announced this, I was like, think of, you know, it's not a ton of jobs, but it's still getting people back to work. So I'm so excited that some of these cast members get to return. Of course, you've got people in like the food service. You got people that work retail at the shops, but then also custodial because security. They're going to have to be doing that. Yep, security. So a couple different areas will be able to fill a few more spots.
Unfortunately, it seems like the poor front gate people probably won't be there.
Yeah.
But maybe
they're doing something.
Maybe
different.
They'll have them there for crowd control or something, because you know you'll need that too. Because
yeah.
I'm curious when this opens, and they haven't announced a date. They just said sometime in November. I'm very interested to see how they handle the crowds and what does Downtown Disney crowd look like now compared to DCA crowd on Buena Vista Street. Because I feel like a lot of people will want to be in the park,
yeah,
just to be in the park, mm-hmm. you know. So mm-hmm. we'll see what happens. I wonder. Oh, there's all types of questions. We'll have to wait and see.
Another Downtown Disney shopping event is happening now through October 29th. Reservations are required, but they have gone quickly. Products that will be available include the 65th anniversary Walt and Mickey vinyl, the 65th anniversary Mr. Toad vinyl, which are both priced at $29.99 plus tax. Plus, we saw a sneak peek. There is a 65th popcorn bucket.
Is that going to be part of this event?
That is going to be part of this event as well. That popcorn bucket looks awesome. So the popcorn bucket looks like a popcorn bucket. It looks like the old cardboard blue,
sure,
like retro.
Go back and watch the 10th anniversary special, Walt's eating those, yes, and signing his name, yes, all over them.
It looks very much like that.
I don't know. I was excited about the Walt and Mickey vinyl until Walt's mustache is blue.
It's an interesting style.
Yeah.
It's not like it's an interesting style. I don't know how to describe it. I don't know. How do I want to say this? I don't know art well enough to say it's like realism. I don't know.
His eyebrows are also
style.
Blue.
Yeah. It's a specific style. Honestly, a lot of people pointed out that his mustache is blue. It didn't really, it didn't stand out that much to me. So I'm not as bothered by it. But now that I'm sitting here looking, his mustache is the same color as his tie.
I want the pop vinyl figure of Walt is that the one that comes with the castle? I will say that the Mr. Toad vinyl looks crazy, which is, I think, what he needs to look like.
I think you mean crazy adorable.
Yeah, but I mean, like, doesn't he look a little, like, wild like he's supposed
to? That's perfect, yeah.
Yeah.
And Mr. Toad, I think, to me, it's the same type of, like, style as what the partner statue is, but a little more fitting since it's a cartoon character versus...
Sure.
You know,
like a real person.
Yep.
Although I am a little disappointed with these kind of merchandise events for Downtown Disney because I feel like people sign up and they go and they get a crack at it. And then just a couple days later, they're just out as normal.
That is true.
Normal things. So it's kind of sad. I don't know. Are any of these things that you want to purchase?
Nothing that I like must have. I'm also, like I told you, I'm also trying to be a little bit more picky on my merch, because if I'm not picky on my merch, my house is already full, so I need to limit myself.
You know, I'm sure we could share this on the stream. So we went to social media manager Alex's house this weekend,
yeah,
and he has an amazing, specifically Haunted Mansion, but also Disney collection.
Yeah.
And amazing. I felt like I could have spent hours in his house looking at everything, because mm-hmm. he has a lot of stuff.
He does.
And some stuff I had never even seen before.
Yeah.
Wow. He has quite the collection. So I know that he's shared some photos and stuff before in the chat. So if you go search in the chat, I'm sure you can find some pictures. But wow, like his Haunted Mansion cabinet and stuff, that was pretty cool. But he has a bookshelf that's full of stuff. I mean, he's got a bunch of pop vinyl and stuff. I'm
amazing.
Jealous. Well, we talked about the 40th anniversary of Make-A-Wish Foundation last week. And just after that episode posted, Disney released the Wishes Come True Blue Color Collection. 25% of the purchase price for each item will go to the Make-A-Wish Foundation, up to $500,000. This is the first color collection that helps benefit a nonprofit. 10,000 of the cloth masks are also being donated to the nonprofit. We saw these, not the masks, but we saw the rest of the collection minus the Crocs and the mask at the Disney store this weekend. I love this collection. The blue looks so cool. In fact,
beautiful.
Alex squealed when he saw them.
Yeah, it is. The blue is even more beautiful in person.
Yes.
We were quite surprised. We walked into the Disney store up in the Mall of America, not thinking that this would be part of what was on display. We were hoping for some Halloween merch. I was really hoping for some masks, maybe Christmas merch. So to walk in, this wasn't even showcased. Like, it wasn't even the first thing you saw when you walked in. You kind of walked in and went around a couple displays, and then bam, there it was. It was so funny because we, of course, like nerded out about it and got all excited about it. As Tag mentioned, Alex gasped. Yes. And there was a cast member that was kind of like straightening up that area and stocking some stuff. And she just like, she just melts. She's like, my people. Like she yeah. was so, she was so touched that we were so excited. She's like, I know, isn't it great? You know, so it was very fun to have that little cast member interaction there. But it's just
I want
gorgeous.
This mask.
I do too. I really want one of these masks.
It's sold out
well.
On Shop Disney. Mm-hmm. I did message Kate today because she said she's going this week. And I said, can you please pick me up? Now, when I ordered my mask through All Enchanting Years, I was a size large. This one, because of how I measured my face, I'm actually an extra large in. So I made sure to mention
that. Do you
want
to share your funny mask, like your funny Disney store mask?
I've shared it a couple times. You could share your or do you think it's funnier if I share the story?
I think it's funnier if you share, because okay. I thought it was very logical.
So we're in the Disney store. We're in the Disney store, and they have an entire wall
of
masks.
Holy cow. If you are looking for Disney masks, go to a Disney store. We found a better variety at the Disney store than when we were at Walt Disney World,
that's
the
true.
Entire resort. So,
so we're standing there, and Teresa's looking, and Alex is looking. Alex grabbed got a couple. I think did you get a couple?
I did grab a couple,
that's right.
But I hadn't purchased a Disney brand
sure.
mask before.
So she didn't know how they fit. So she's looking at the display, and the display has, if you measure from the bridge of your nose to just your chin, and then from your nose to your ear, that, you know, and depending on those measurements, this is the size you need. And I'm like, well, this isn't very helpful. There's no way to measure that.
Yeah.
And Teresa's like, yeah, that's a bummer. And there was this other lady, and she's like, I know, there's no way to do it. So they're sitting there, and Teresa's like, wait a minute. And she opens her purse, and she has a measuring thing in her purse. And then the other lady goes, I have one of those in my purse. And I was like, oh, yeah, man, this totally feeds into the stereotype that women have everything in their purses.
Which is hilarious, because I carry a big purse because I like to put a water bottle and bulkier things in it. But really, in my purse, I have my wallet, my phone, and a couple, like a pair of sunglasses, and maybe like chapstick and like old receipts.
Yeah,
that
you don't
fell
have
to
anything
the bottom.
In there.
I really don't carry very much in my purse. Oh, and my keys. I really don't carry that much in my purse. But a while ago, it all started when we were doing, like when I became a homeowner and we were constantly going to the hardware store and I was always needing to measure things, I finally decided that I needed a small measuring tape to keep in my purse. So that's one of the,
and you had
one
forgotten
of the few
about it.
Things I have, and I totally forgot about it. But it came in handy. It was perfect.
It did.
Absolutely perfect.
Well, what do you think about the partnership with Make-A-Wish?
I think it's awesome. I think it's so awesome. I hope that they're going to do things like this in the future too, maybe partner with other charities.
Yeah.
But I'm so happy that it's such an awesome and beautiful collection that
yeah.
people are excited about. Plus it's going, you know, part of the proceeds are going to a really great, really, really great cause. So I'm really happy that this was the collection that they decided to do this on. Because there have been some other colors that they've done in the past that just weren't as exciting, but I've
good.
Heard nothing but raves about this blue. Because, right, like we're seeing in our chat right now, Sorcerer Mickey vibes, like
yeah.
to no end. And who doesn't love Sorcerer Mickey? So it's a beautiful, beautiful collection.
The other thing that I think is really great here is they are donating 25% of the purchase cost,
yeah.
not 25% of the profit, mm-hmm. which is usually like a weird kind of thing that people will say. So that's 25%. So if you pay, how much are these? 15, 20 bucks?
For
the mask.
The masks are between 12 and, we'll say 13.
13. So they're getting a few bucks
yeah.
off of each of those
yeah.
sales. So that's good.
And then think about the spirit jerseys.
Yeah.
So,
$70
spirit
jerseys.
Yep.
So,
Ralph Brennan's Kitchen has added three new sauces to their lineup for beignets. The new sauces include a blueberry sauce, a caramel apple sauce, and a praline maple anglaise. The sauces are $1.49 each and are available at the Jazz Kitchen Express in Downtown Disney. Yum.
I
blueberry
love beignets.
Sauce? Yum.
And I would love to try these different sauces. Unfortunately, we are not there.
No.
But if anybody does go and does try these, please let us know.
Yes, I'm very curious because they sound wonderful.
Freya in our chat said she's a newly minted Jazz Kitchen fan, so maybe you can go back now and try some of these new sauces. Disney has partnered with historically black colleges and universities, inspire students to dream big. Disney is hoping to create career paths for HBCU students in order to build a long-term pipeline of black talent. Student internships, mentorship opportunities, and inclusive hiring practices are all aspects of this program.
I think this is really a really wonderful thing that they're doing. Of course, I think it's great. So not only is this great for these students, but it's also great for the company because obviously lots of opportunities for the students, but Disney employees from all over the company also have the opportunity to support this HBCU engagement from volunteering, participating in the mentorship opportunities and recruitment efforts, plus more. So I think it's really good, right? This is helps promote diversity, helps support inclusion.
Mm-hmm.
Win-win.
Absolutely. I think that this is great that Disney seems to be really going full force into this.
Yeah.
We've had a couple stories this year about all the different projects and stuff and these initiatives that they're doing throughout their company. So I think that's great. And I hope to see more inclusive themes maybe come to the parks and everything like that. So awesome.
Yeah. So some of the colleges that are going to be part of this program are Florida A&M University in Tallahassee, Howard University in Washington, D.C., North Carolina A&T State University in Greensboro, and Hampton University in Virginia. Blue Loop, an online resource for professionals working in the visitor attraction sector, have recognized 5 leaders from Disney on their 50 theme park influencers list for 2020. The list celebrates the most creative and inspirational people in the theme park industry. How fitting that Disney was recognized for that. When I hear the words creative and inspirational, like, to me that is part of the definition of what an Imagineer does.
Oh, yeah. The fact that they have 5 people from the Disney company on this 50 list is pretty awesome. So they are Carmen Smith, who's the Vice President, Creative Development for Walt Disney Imagineering. Of course, Imagineering.
Perfect, yeah.
Asia Kalman, Executive Creative Director for Walt Disney Imagineering. Bettina Buckley, Vice President, Disney Parks Live Entertainment at the Walt Disney World Resort. Mm-hmm. Charita Carter, Senior Producer, Walt Disney Imagineering, and Tracy Eck, Art Director, Disneyland Paris, Walt Disney Imagineering.
Wonderful. I love it.
Congratulations to them, and, you know, keep up the good work. And, you know, Disney's been known for a long time to be a great spot to kind of foster that creativity and stuff like that, so that's amazing. This week, a trailer was released for Raya and the Last Dragon. The movie is currently scheduled to premiere in theaters in March of 2021. The movie is inspired by Southeast Asia and will combine Disney classics with Hong Kong action films. This looks pretty cool. I cannot get over, as more of these computer animated films come out, how real they look. There's a scene in this where there's like a hallway or something, and I would have sworn it was real.
This is like extra exciting just because this is something that we hadn't heard of until last year's D23 Expo is when they announced that this was coming. So it seems like it's been a long time in the works since last year it was announced. And now we finally have a trailer and we have a release date. Fingers crossed that we can have it in theaters. But just very fun. I'm just so excited that it's an original story. We're not remaking something or we're not redoing something we've done before. I'm very excited for this.
The computer animation, like I'm looking
beautiful.
At the trailer
gorgeous.
Or at the poster, the water looks so realistic. It does seem like a really cool story too. I'm very interested. I literally knew almost nothing about it. I had to watch the trailer before writing this day because I'm like, I don't remember what this is about. It looks good. And like I said, the animation quality for sure. And the fact that we're getting, again, a more diverse storyline. It's not just some princess and prince thing going on.
Yep, strong female lead. Mm-hmm. Very excited for this. Plus, dragons. Come on.
No, who doesn't love dragons? I mean, we have a distinct lack of dragon this year with Mulan. Without Mushu, right?
That is true. There is a dragon-shaped hole in the Mulan movie. Well, now it's time to take a trip to Trivia Land, where producer Vern will try and stump us with some Disney trivia. Well, you know how it's been going last weeks, if not months. He will stump us because we're not doing so good. Maybe today will be. We'll like turn a corner today and we'll have a good trivia day. He's going to ask us 4 questions, perhaps a bonus. We're going to try to answer them and then we're going to get the correct answers after our discussion topic. So what do you have for us this week, Vern?
Well, you give me far too much credit. It's not entirely me or producer James that are the ones that are stumping you. It is also our incredible listeners who send us in these awesome questions.
But it's so much easier to blame you than to blame our listeners.
Very true. But it is largely the listeners who do help us out very much. And listeners, if you have any questions that you have been dying to send in to us, please feel free to get those sent in to trivia@dlweekly.net. You are a very valuable resource to us. We can't do all this research on our own and find these great questions, so we do appreciate everything that you do send. So let's get right into it with our first listener submitted question of tonight. This one comes from listener Chris Y. In 1988, Big Thunder Ranch was home to a very special animal. Who was it?
What year was that?
1988.
So the year I was born.
Yes.
Just to put it in perspective.
And Tag and I were seven. So Tag may have been there. Tag might have actually seen this animal.
Nope, that was a year before I went to Disneyland the first time.
I'm going to say an armadillo.
Oh. See, I'm going to go with what we were talking about earlier. I think it was many years after that. Maybe it was one of the first years that the turkey got put there, the pardoned turkey.
So you're going to go with Ethan with his Thanksgiving turkey?
Well, I was thinking that before Ethan said it. But I was trying to, but the way it's worded, it sounds like it wouldn't be something that was like all the time. I'm going to say the Thanksgiving pardoned turkey. That's just going to be what I'm going to say.
So it was the armadillo and the pardoned turkey. Our second listener submitted a question from listener Samuel S. When guests entered the Haunted Mansion elevator stretching room and foolish mortals received a self-introduction from their ghost host, what is the name of the TV and movie character voice actor who lent his voice for this role?
What is his name?
I know that the dude who was later on is Thurl Ravenscroft.
No.
He does all sorts of horror stuff. You'll know.
Vincent Price?
Yes.
I don't think that's right, though.
You don't think it's Vincent Price?
Well, Vincent Price did the narration for the Disneyland Paris version.
Oh. Maybe that's what I was thinking. Dang it.
I'm going to say Thurl Ravenscroft because he did the Tony the Tiger, I think.
They're great.
He's one of the singing busts in the Haunted Mansion.
Well, then who's the Tony the Tiger? Is the singing bust one? Mm-hmm. I'm still going to say Thurl Ravenscroft.
I'm going to, not. It's not my answer, but Laura in the chat is saying Paul Frees.
So what's your answer?
I don't know. I'm just sharing the chat's answers. I've given up. They've got this. I don't.
Standing in for Teresa
tonight.
Yeah,
standing
tonight
in
will
for
be...
Teresa is Lori and Laura.
All right. Question number three from listener Joy B. Which ride at Disneyland Park usually has the most riders per day?
It's a Small World.
Did we have that question?
I don't remember if we did or not.
Or if it was asked in a
different
way. If
it was a capacity. It's a Small World is what I'm going to say.
You have had the capacity question. Mm-hmm. Either I asked it or I was in the room when it was asked.
Okay, so this is a different one.
Yeah, because didn't we have to, like, we had to list, like, the three highest ones. So this could be a trick. I'm still going to go because I feel like It's a Small World and Pirates of the Caribbean are the top two. So usually, I'm still going to stick with Small World.
Yeah, I'm going to say it's a Small World.
It's your final answer?
Final answer.
Part of me wanted to say something about the Disneyland Railroad, but I was like, no, because that's not a constant thing. I mean, that holds a lot of people, but it's not constant. Anyway, okay.
That's a good point, though. See?
Your fourth question from listener Liberty M. The home decor shop on Buena Vista Street at Disney California Adventure, Julius Katz and Sons, was inspired by what cartoon comedy series?
Ooh. I don't know.
I'm not sure either because I'm thinking about what it looks like on the inside. And apparently I have missed details that they have in this shop to kind of give this, you know, so that have the connection here for us.
Liberty, the submitter of this question, is in our chat giving us hints.
Yeah, think vintage
cartoons. Cheater!
It's all right. People are still stuck on the capacity question.
I don't think it's the Alice comedies, because I'm thinking
wasn't capacity.
Cartoon.
I don't even have a guess. I don't know.
I'm going to say Silly Symphonies.
I don't have a guess.
It's the only series I can think of right now.
Sure.
Your bonus question from listener Lee S. What happened to the letters that spelled California that used to sit in front of DCA from 2001 to 2011?
I finally know one.
I know one, too.
It's at the state, the California State Fairgrounds.
Is that your final answer?
It's at Cal Expo.
Oh, Cal Expo. Is it the same
thing?
That's
what it's called, yep.
You're like, I'm from the Midwest. It's the State Fairgrounds.
I mean, that's what it is. They just call it. They Cal just Expo. Call it that. Hi, Barbara.
That's your final answer.
Yes.
Okay. Well, listeners, how do you think they did? And how did you do listening at home? Do you think you got the right answers? Stay listening after the discussion to find out.
This week for our discussion topic, we are speaking with former Jungle Cruise skipper Vetter. Now, Vetter has listened to the show for a little while. He has popped in on a few of our streams. We've had him in the chat talking and stuff like that. So it's finally nice to actually have you on the show and get you know an interview with you and talk to a real life Jungle Cruise skipper. So welcome to the show, Skipper Vetter.
Well, guys, you know, I've been, as you said, I've been listening for a while. I one time also got in trouble for listening to you guys' show while in the break room.
Oh,
that's a new one.
why did you get in trouble? Was that, did you have it like on speakerphone or something, or were they like, wait a
because
minute?
I had my headphones in and you're not allowed to have them in, but yeah, I had a hoodie, so I was like, they said, why do you have a hoodie on? Just because, you know, I'm a little cold. And they're like, damn, I don't believe that. So I had to undo my hoodie and my headphone was there and was listening to you guys.
Gotcha.
He was. Well, I'm sorry we got you in trouble. DL Weekly while at the magic or the happiest place on earth. I love it. That's so funny.
It's so amazing so funny to us that people that work for Disney listen to us. You know, the ambassador said that they listen to us. Like, it's just amazing to think that people that work there. I don't know. I feel like if I worked there, I don't know if I would listen to Disney podcasts. Like, I'd feel like I'd be in the know.
I'm sure we're gonna learn from Vetter that the people that bring us the magic also like just love the magic, and that's why they do it. So with that, Vetter, what is your Disney story? How did you fall in love with the parks, the company? What made you decide to apply and become a Jungle Cruise skipper? Give us all the details.
To make it like a short story,
you can make it long, that's fine.
it's not gonna be that long. So it all started when I was actually 2 years old.
Wow.
My mom and dad would take me to the park every weekend, and my mom and dad actually both worked for the parks.
Oh, very cool. If you don't mind me asking, what did your parents do at the parks?
My mom worked at DCA when it first opened as a vendor, and my dad also worked as a vendor, but he worked at Disneyland, but they both worked at different times.
Oh, interesting. Very cool.
Dad worked from 99 to 2000, and my mom worked from when DCA opened for like about 5 months.
It's kind of a family tradition now.
And actually, my cousin worked at DCA too, and she worked at Grizzly River Run and Mickey's Fun Wheel. So, it like you said, it's like an unwritten tradition that we have in the family.
You know, maybe we should get his cousin on here and ask if they have that special geyser button we've decided that must exist.
The one that got us completely
The one that
soaked.
Got us soaked, and we never saw anyone else get hit by the geyser quite like we did.
Sure.
So we decided there's got to be some sort of special geyser button so they can mess with the guests.
They're just getting us back for having one of their cast members listening to us when they're not supposed to be listening to us.
Sorry for interrupting. Continue with your Disney story.
I started getting into it, started watching these YouTube channels and, you know, the history, like Baked, the Funk Land, TPM Vids, and then I started getting into actually the podcast, and you know, with I don't know if you guys heard of it, Podcast the Ride. You know, I started listening to them, and then other Disney podcasts, your guys's, I listened to Jim Hill, Creep Slot Podcast, and you know, a lot of other ones.
Wow,
Jim Hill has a huge knowledge base of Disney stuff.
And huge network. He's got like 5 podcasts, one about Marvel, Star Wars, Disney, and toys. And like, he's got another one. I don't remember what the other one is.
Yeah. I mean, he's written a lot of blog posts and stuff. I think he's written some books too. He's very knowledgeable in the subject.
So has it always been sort of like a fascination with Disneyland, or have you been like, did you grow up watching the movies and just really love the characters and the stories too?
It's more Disneyland. I never really got into the the movies and the stuff, but like the fact that one man had a dream to create a theme park.
It's amazing, isn't it?
You don't hear that a lot. Like, it's just something that just never, you know, happened before. Mm-hmm. Or like before it'd be like, oh, it's a company trying to create something like a theme park. Or like with Universal, it first started as a movie studio. Then they came up with the idea of a theme park.
It's amazing.
And we're very happy that he did, because we wouldn't have what we have today without that. And it's pushed other people. I mean, like you said, Universal and stuff all took cues from it. So when you go to the parks, obviously when you're not working, which way do you go? Do you go towards Adventureland? Do you go through towards Fantasy, or towards Fantasyland? Do you go right towards Tomorrowland?
I actually go to Adventureland.
How fitting.
I cross by my friends at the Jungle Cruise and I go straight for Indy.
Perfect. You can come with us anytime, Vetter.
Yes. Yes. Indiana Jones is an amazing attraction. Mm-hmm.
So on that, what is your favorite attraction at the park?
It is, I actually have two, one at Disneyland, one in California Adventure.
Perfect.
At Disneyland, it's Space Mountain. But mainly Star Wars overlay, the Hyperspace Mountain.
Oh, yes, Hyperspace Mountain. Mm-hmm.
Also like the regular Space Mountain. At California Adventure, it's Grizzly River Run.
Really? I don't think anybody said Grizzly River Run.
My guess was going to be either Guardians, or for some reason, I feel like you're a thrill ride type of guy. So I was thinking
I'm not.
The Incredicoaster. No, you're not?
No. I don't like Guardians. I don't like roller coasters. I get this weird feeling in my stomach. It's weird.
You don't get that for Space Mountain, though, huh?
It's because, I don't know, maybe because I can't see where I'm going. Like one of those, if I don't see, then I don't expect it coming. Like with what is it called? Oh, Incredicoaster now. Sorry. So like with that, you see when the drops are coming. It's just
maybe it's more of a height thing. Cause for me, like I don't like heights, so I'll go on any roller coaster. But there was one in Cedar Fair that we went to, that's in Ohio or something. And it's, The chain lift to go up is the scariest part for me, because it's just slow and all you're doing is looking around. But once you start going, it's fine. It's just that whole height aspect for me that just ruins it. And Freya in our chat, who, for those of you who may not know, she does have a visual impairment, said that she can attest to not seeing it makes it easier.
Oh, Freya.
Sorry, I had to share that because I thought that was hilarious.
So, Vetter, if you don't mind us asking, I'm very curious because you very recently worked at the Disneyland Resort and you were very recently a skipper. So what was it like? What was the hiring process like when you decided that being a Disney cast member was what you wanted to do?
It was actually sort of an easier process because I actually went to go apply when my cousin was still there. So I kind of have insiders.
There you go. You had an in. You knew a guy.
So like,
or a girl.
I knew where to go. Sort of a funny person. I was funny in high school and funny in I was funny in school. So like, you know, it was kind of my calling to become a skipper. When I was there, it was about a group of 10 other people. And I know you guys aren't probably familiar with the freeways. There's a freeway to go in Disneyland and you see this like sort of like a turquoise building. That's kind of where I went. I know it's different for everywhere, but that's where I went to go apply in. And there's also you go in and, you know, you meet this interviewer. They ask you, you give them their resume and everything. And then, I didn't have one, but if you would give them your resume, you go and, you know, they ask you why you would be a perfect fit for Disney and then go to the training. After the training, you get a certificate and, you know, you get your name tag and everything. It's a cool process.
So did you have your interview and then kind of start training within like the same day, or was there a waiting period in between?
Like this may vary from different people, but mine was about a week. I wasn't expecting it to be that quick.
Right. When did you apply to start working there? And then when did you start working there, I guess?
Yeah, so from the interview to when you like had your first day, was that a week?
No, that was more of a month process.
Okay.
Because from when I first did the first interview to actually being able to work there, because you do your interview and then from there you do the training, which is about 2 weeks. And then after that, you find out when you're going to actually work.
So when you're applying, do you know what position or what attraction it is that you're applying for? Or do they, is it kind of a blind interview and they kind of decide where you would fit best? So did you know that you were applying to be a Jungle Cruise skipper, or did they meet you and say, ooh, we've got the perfect spot for this guy?
It's like a kind of like a thing, like kind of like a, if you were to go, what attractions would you pick or what land would you pick?
Oh, okay.
So pick Adventureland, and then they'll be like, okay, so you're going to work Cars and Treehouse and a Stinky Room. So, yes. So like you would work those two attractions and then you would like switch over. And then as you get more and more experience, then you would move to like Indy.
So it's kind of like a ladder. So it's not like you first get hired and
you get right thrown on a boat.
You're Jungle Cruise skipper vet, or you kind of, there's kind of a little bit of a ladder you had to climb there, huh?
Yeah. But with the Jungle Cruise one, it's more of a, you know, how funny are you? And with me, I chose Adventureland because, you know, I go there. It was more of a, are you funny? And then, like, you say yes, and then, like, you're okay. Like, give me some jokes. And, like, that's basically what it is.
How terrible. That would be awful.
Like, I would feel so, like, weird on the spot. I would probably start saying stupid, like, well, that's probably how they get you. Because then you just start saying corny Jungle Cruise type jokes. They're like, psh. Perfect, you're a natural.
I feel like producer Vern would go in there and he'd just be like, jokes, O2H, O2H.
That would be,
he enters the building screaming O2H.
Yeah. That would be really hard to like not just start doing jokes. When you're, because you're already thinking about Adventureland,
right,
and
right.
They're like, tell me a joke. You're like, good thing the elephants have their trunks on, or whatever. Oh, too fun. That does sound like a very fun interview process, though. I love it.
Yeah.
So how long does it take for you to like become a skipper? So from training to when you get to take your first trip around the uncharted waters that is the Jungle Cruise?
For me, because I, you know, was used to the ride, and like it was like a ride that would ride almost every time I went, it was more of a quicker process because I kind of knew what to do.
But sure.
When I actually first, I would go before the park opened and I would go after the park closed. And then, you know, you do your test runs with an actual.
Oh, sure.
Customer that would be there. Mm-hmm. So you do your test runs and then you actually, I first started off at the docks.
Sure, sure. So like the loading and unloading.
Professional elbow holders, yes.
Do you hear that? A professional elbow holder?
I always thought that was funny on the Jungle Cruise because they always grab your elbow. And I'm always like, why are you grabbing? I mean, I know that there's probably a reason for it, but I was always just like, so sometimes I try to just like get out quick enough that they don't touch me because I don't like people touching me that much. So,
well, we have a professional with us. So, Vetter, is there a specific reason that they are always professional elbow holders?
More of a safety reason because you can grab the elbow is more of a, like, you know, more secure part of your body.
Sure. Okay, sure.
Like if you do fall, we could get a better grab of your elbow.
Gotcha.
And say your forearm.
Sure, sure. That makes sense.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm just trying to think of like all my experiences with the Jungle Cruise, and I'm thinking about jokes, and I love one of my favorite, this will be a question for you, Vetter, but one of my favorite Jungle Cruise jokes is when you get towards the end, they're like, well, if you enjoyed your trip today, I've been, you know, Vetter, and this has been the world famous Jungle Cruise. If you didn't enjoy it, my name's, you know, Juan, and this was It's a Small World.
Yeah.
what's your favorite joke?
You know, it was funny we were chanting H2O earlier because that's actually my favorite joke because, like, it's so... You try to get people to actually, you know, say it. And then when you do say it, it's like more fun. And
sure.
Also, actually, one of my second favorite ones is we do this since the Jungle Cruise movie was supposed to come out. We would make this joke the rock was an actual rock. So there would be rocks and be like limestone, stones. Like, I don't remember the other ones right now. It's slipping my mind. And it would be like, oh, and there's also Dwayne The Rock Johnson. It was one of those corny jokes that not many people laughed at. But, you know, that's almost the whole Jungle Cruise.
Oh, for sure.
You know, I have to ask. So I feel so bad when I'm on a boat with other people and nobody, like, it must be a whole boat of people who've never been on the Jungle Cruise and they just don't get it and they're just all quiet.
Or they're taking it too seriously or something.
How do you feel as a skipper when you have a boat of people that just do not understand the wonderfulness that is the Jungle Cruise?
It's like you take it to your heart, like, man, have I really been that good? Like, is this really, it's a small world? Get that sense of like, I'm gonna try to interact with the crowd. So like at the end you say like, oh, whose birthday is it? And then like interact with them. So then they feel like they're a part of it, not that they're just on some ride, any other ride.
Here's a question for you. Now let us know if we're asking too, if this is too behind the curtain. But when you're skippering the boat, I don't even know if that's a word, I just made it up, skippering. But when you're driving the boat, how much control do you actually have over the boat? So do you really need to be paying like super close attention like you're driving a car? Or is it a little bit, you know, some control, but more of a show? So then that way you do have the ability to interact with the guests more so than having to keep both eyes in front of you on the wheel.
The way that Disney wants us to say is, you know, we can drive with our hands behind our back.
Man, you guys are talented.
Yeah, the training is very serious. It's like boot camp.
So, sometimes I try and think, because right, you go on other attractions. So well, like ever, Indiana Jones.
Do you ever watch the Jungle Cruise Skipper?
I've watched the Skipper.
I don't think they steer anything. I think that wheel is just symbolic.
Yeah, well, yeah, for sure. But I'm thinking about like accelerating. Like, do you have control over when you go, when you don't go? You know, that sort of stuff. Because right, a lot of attractions, Indiana Jones, you can almost, like, if you've been on it enough, you get muscle memory. You know exactly where all the bumps are going to be, when to go left, right, all that kind of stuff. Whereas the Jungle Cruise, I don't ever feel, it's always very similar, but I can't ever tell if it's identical as far as, now is it, are we pausing longer here this time around? Or, you know, I don't have a good sense of it. Probably because I'm too busy always looking at all of the same things that have been there for years and years and years and listening to the jokes that have also maybe been there for years and years and years, but I still love them. So it's just always, I've just always wondered how much control they have over the boat versus how much Disney magic there is on the boat.
Well, there's little sensors. Some, you might notice some of them because they're less hidden than others. There's sensors at certain parts. So like,
sure.
So you're at the elephant bathing pool, there's sensors that slow your boat down. You're also on a track. For anyone who doesn't know that. So you're on a track. So there's also something that senses that the boat's there. So it slows it down. There's parts where there's no sensors. That's when we actually have to, you know, control the boat. But we don't.
Interesting.
I'm remembering this correct. The top speed we could go is 10 miles per hour.
Whew.
That's still pretty fast.
That is pretty fast.
Especially on the water.
For a boat. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because I know that, you know, I think that it kind of goes with whatever your Jungle Cruise joke set is going to be, too. Because I've been on the Jungle Cruise before where it seemed like the skipper was slowing down or stopping frequently. Mm-hmm. And I've also been on one where I don't know if they were just trying to be done. Like, they had to, they had like a quota of how many boats to take out for the day.
Had a hot date after that trip.
And they were just kind of going. Like, I remember at least one time where I feel like we didn't even stop. Like,
really?
we might have slowed down a little bit, but we didn't stop almost the whole. It was a very quick jot around the thing. But anyway, yeah. So here's a question I've always wanted to ask. Do you do the same jokes every time you go out? And are there certain jokes that you're expected to do every time you go out? Or do you just pick from like a category? Do you get to make up your own jokes? I feel like a lot of people want to know the answers to these kind of things, because I've heard that there's like a book of like approved jokes, but I don't know the reality of that.
Yes, that book is a real thing. It's more of like a stapled pages.
Sure.
Stapled pages.
It's still technically a book. But
I feel like that's very fitting for Jungle Cruise skippers. The book, the official book, is just pages stapled together. That just fits.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it really is like, so we get to make our own jokes, but we're very limited. We can't say like, oh, like can't make topical jokes, but like we can make jokes that are like have been passed on.
So you can't make jokes like the genie used to do in Aladdin, mm-hmm. where you could make like really current stuff. Yeah.
You would be gone once you come back to that dock.
Oh, so wow. Is there some sort of like the new Dwayne the Rock Johnson joke? So was that a skipper's idea and they had to go through some sort of process to get that joke approved so that it would be able to be used while out on the attraction? Or how does that work? Because it always throws me off and I love hearing new jokes, but I always wonder, how does a new joke come to be?
Some of them are actually Disney implementing the jokes, but other times, if it's not heard or was not said by any other skipper, then it's most likely theirs.
Oh, interesting. So was there any skipper vetter specific jokes if we were to take a trip around the jungle with you?
I tried not to do that because I was more scared of like what I think skipper would say. So.
Gotcha. You didn't want to get in trouble.
Yeah.
Back to the part of the question that we squished over, which is when you go out, do you do the same jokes every single time?
It's I kind of switch it up a little bit, you know, like, but some of the jokes that you kind of had to say that are a staple for the ride is H2O, Schweitzer Falls. There's two different versions of that, and the elephant bathing pool. They all have the trunks on.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think I've heard that every single time. I guess that makes sense, though, because if you're like a big fan and you go on and they don't talk about it, you're kind of like, what happened?
Could you imagine going on the Jungle Cruise, getting behind Schweitzer Falls and then not pointing out that it's the backside of water?
No.
Like, that would just feel very weird to quietly go under the waterfall.
You'd be denial.
That makes sense. You'd be in denial. That makes sense that there are specific ones. The elephant bathing pool, though, that one, I don't know if I've noticed. I've heard every single time. I've heard variations for sure.
So what was it like for you personally to work on this universally beloved, iconic attraction? I feel it'd be like working on Pirates or Haunted Mansion. Like, it's so iconic.
There was some pressure at first, but then after that, it kind of becomes routine. You would get these celebrities, but, you know, the celebrities would be more towards the higher people. But, like, other than that, you know, there's no really any pressure. It's like, you know, do your job and you're fine.
A typical day being a Jungle Cruise skipper, how many times do you think you go around the loop in a shift?
Practical number, 100, but it actually feels like 3,000.
Wow. I know. See, I always think it'd be fun to be a Jungle Cruise skipper to go around like 5 times. But I think after a while it might get a little like, oh.
Well, it's.
So I wasn't sure if they maybe rotated you guys around to kind of change it up.
It's like that joke that some of the skippers say, which is, oh, you haven't seen this before, but I have every 15 minutes over and over.
That's not a joke. That's real. that's their cry for help.
please put me somewhere else. Now, do you guys, so once you're a skipper, do you spend like your whole shift skippering, or do you swap out and help people on the dock and do all that stuff? Or do you just stay in the boat all day?
There's some people that alternate, but I'm one of the people that alternate. So like, you take maybe one or two trips around the river and then you leave and then you come onto the dock.
See, I think that would be how I'd want to do it.
That's nice, because that's one thing I like about Disney's attractions people is it seems like they do a lot of rotating.
Yeah.
They move to different parts of the queue and stuff like that, which I think is nice because it kind of makes your day more variety, because mm-hmm. I would get so bored, and especially with something like the Jungle Cruise where you're saying the same thing, you know, or something similar over and over again. Although it is a longer attraction, it's better than maybe being stuck, let's say, in the Haunted Mansion going up and down the stretching room all day or something like that. At least you get some variety.
So, Vetter, have you worked on any other attractions, or has it just always been the Jungle Cruise for you?
It's always been the Jungle Cruise, but if this whole COVID thing never happened, then I would have moved to Galaxy's Edge.
Oh. What would you have done in Galaxy's Edge? Or do you know?
Skipper turned
resistance fighter.
Ooh.
He was deep undercover.
I will tell you, Vetter.
Deep
I will
undercover.
Tell you. Teresa and I went on that in Disney World, and the cast members working that attraction were like top notch.
Mm-hmm.
When they were amazing. In character. So I hope that when everything gets back to normal and back opened up, I hope you get recalled, and I hope that you get to work there, because that is an amazing. I mean, I think the Jungle Cruise is one of those attractions you need to have a lot of personality to bring yourself to it, and I think Rise of the Resistance is also one of those. So congratulations that you would have maybe done that.
I was more hoping to become a, what is it, First Order? Because, you know, I could, you know, do that part more. But
yeah,
you know,
yes.
I felt, you know, very, I don't know what's the word, like happy that I was chosen to become Resistance fighter for Edge and Rise of Resistance.
So, so cool.
What is something that you learned working at the Jungle Cruise that surprised you?
It's kind of a hard one, but, you know, I learned to take defeat, because you gotta, like, what, like you said earlier, there's boats that don't care that you're there. You learn to take the losses more than the win. You have more boats that have less entertaining people and boats that have more entertaining people, like Teresa, where they go along with the jokes or they laugh and, like, more interactive.
I think he's been on the Jungle Cruise with me a couple times. He knows.
I don't know. The most enthusiastic person I've ever been on the Jungle Cruise with has to be Vern, because Vern loves the jokes of the Jungle Cruise and totally partakes. And when they, some of his favorites, like O2H, when they go, he gets 110%. 110%. And then do you have, like, what's your most memorable moment as a skipper?
Choose just one, you can give us a couple.
There's a time where a little boy came to me and he said if we could take a picture together, and I asked him if he wanted to drive the boat, and he was, like, so excited. He, like, gave me a big hug, and this was pre-2020, so, like, there was no COVID or anything, so.
Yeah. That's so amazing. Were you guys still at the dock when he came up and asked for the photo? Was everyone still loading? Or did he drive while you guys were going around?
He was one of the first people. You know how, like, you come in and, like, you're the first people and you go, like, right next to the skipper?
Yeah.
And, like, he was a little shy to ask. He went with his mom. I feel like the more kids come out of their shell, the more, you know, better our future would be, because who knows if that kid was be your future Imagineer and I, you know, helped him.
Yeah.
Out of a shell and not be so shy.
Yeah.
Oh, that's, I'd love that.
You know what's amazing? And we say this all the time, that cast members really are who create the magic and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But one thing that we've learned from interviewing cast members on this show is that for as much as cast members make memorable moments for guests, guests also make memorable moments for cast members. And that's great to hear.
People really don't, you know, look over the fact that, you know, guests and change cast members' lives. That one thank you, or that one blow, or, like, high five. Someone could have been having a horrible day, and, like, they have to put on that smile that Disney makes you have. You change their mood for the whole day, and, you know, kind of like a pass it on thing. You know, that cast member brings it on to another cast member, and then that goes on, and they bring it home, and then, like, it continues on.
Yeah, and people have to remember, you know, it works both ways. You know, if you're in a bad mood, you can easily rub that off on other people. Mm-hmm. And if you're in a good mood, you could easily rub that off on people. And it's definitely contagious.
It is contagious. And, you know, it's always, I always wonder how people could be in a bad mood when they're at Disney. So it always breaks my heart when guests aren't having a good day or something's gone wrong, but then they take it on the cast member, and then, you know, that kind of travels on. So, unfortunately, I think negativity usually flows more freely than positivity does, because we don't always remember to say thank you or, like, something that was amazing. Or
I think people,
same thing with, like, comments, right? Usually people are more apt to comment if they're upset with something versus if they're excited. So I think it's great that people try to, you know, pass on the positivity.
I think what it is that people expect people to be good, and so when things are bad, they get more mad about it or whatever. That, you know, like, I agree with you. When we were at Disney, and every time we go to Disney, we try to keep in mind when we have good cast member experiences. My thing I've been doing lately is I take a picture of their name tag so I remember who they are and, you know, like, where they're from or whatever, because that'll help. And then go put in something at City Hall. So I try to do that. I also try to, and taking a picture of their name tag helps, because then they know, like, oh, you're actually going to say something nice about me, which makes them feel good, like, in the moment.
It, like, it really, you know, is the regulations team, they call your manager, and, you know, sometimes they kind of, like, at the end of the day or, like, at the end of their shift, you know, the cast members, they kind of, like, you know, congratulate you for, like, being, you know, a star cast member.
Nice.
That's awesome.
That's good to know, because, you know, we always, it's good to, like, we feel good turning in the cast member compliments, and I'm always fairly certain it will end up back to that cast member, and I always hope that it results in something more than just my kind words, and that, you know, you get recognized by a superior or fellow mm-hmm. cast members or something like that. So that's great to know that, you know, to kind of know what happens once you turn that into City Hall.
Yeah.
Yeah, Disney tries their best to actually, you know, recognize the people that are going above and beyond with their job, not just going in and like doing their regular, you know, YouTube things and then leaving for the day and taking their paycheck. They want people to excel and go above and beyond on what they do.
For sure.
Yeah. And really, I mean, it's not like working at Disney pays a ton, you know, and you're putting up with a lot of people who may not be having their best day and might treat you like garbage. So it makes all the difference when people acknowledge that and can put in a good word or something like that. So the last thing I have to ask you is there anywhere other than attractions? This isn't the final question, by the way. This is just my final question. Is there another, like, when you applied, did you want to work attractions, or was there somewhere else in the park you wanted to work, you know, food service or custodial or any of that?
It was always attractions.
Me too. I would always want to work attractions. I want to work the monorail or the train or Indiana Jones. Anyway.
Okay, I've got a couple Jungle Cruise specific questions for you, Skipper Vetter. Did you have a favorite boat? And which one was it if you did have a favorite boat?
I never had a favorite boat, but if I did, it would be the Cargo Queen.
The Cargo Queen. Nice. And then my other question too is, in the attraction itself, do you have a favorite scene or a favorite part? Like, is the elephant bathing pool the most fun, exciting part for you? Or is it...
Schweitzer Falls.
Schweitzer Falls? The front side or the back side?
Back side. Because the back side, you get all that mist. And like, if it's a hot California day, it's just refreshing.
That's true.
And that's where Vetter stops the boat and just sits there for a minute and gets the mist.
He's like, pause. I hope the sensor does not pick up on us that we're hanging out back here.
Are you how does that work? Because if skippers can do different speeds and stuff, how does it work where maybe you decide to take a little bit longer or shorter? Do you get in trouble if you stay somewhere too long or not long enough?
Yeah. And also, you may not notice this, but some of them have an earpiece and like, there's people in control rooms that are looking at cameras and like they tell you, hey, you're not supposed to, there's a pile up, so stay in this part longer. Yeah. Or hey, there's like with your instance tag, there's probably less boats on the actual track. So it's, hey, there's less boats. Hurry this up. Sure, try not to make as much stops.
That makes sense. They probably look at the attraction wait time and yeah, that makes total sense.
How often do people derail the boats?
It's not very common, but it
seems
does
like
happen.
Hard. It does happen.
I was going to say, because I thought I read somewhere in some book that I was reading or an article or something that I mean, they have like a whole thing. They have to come out and like
put it back on.
And all this stuff. So I was just curious. You know, hopefully you've never derailed a boat, even in your training.
I haven't yet.
That's good.
I haven't yet. There's still hope for
him. Right.
And then,
wait, wasn't there somewhere, didn't we read or hear from somebody that there's what's the word I'm looking for? What do you call it when like a hazing ritual or something for Jungle Cruise?
Was there something
like that?
About that, like when you leave the Jungle Cruise, you have to go swim around.
Vetter knows what I'm talking about.
You tell us, you're the professional.
There's a forbidden kind of like rule. If you kind of get, if you quit or you get fired, you have to swim in the Jungle Cruise murky water. Mm-hmm. You know, Disney doesn't encourage it, but like,
right.
It has happened.
No, well, I hope you didn't have to do it.
When, but it does happen.
Have you been present when someone's had to take a lap?
Yes.
Gross. So do they come out like full of like their clothes are a different color? Or did they come out pretty clean?
They came out clean, just like leaves stuck to them.
Sure.
Other than that, it's just it's just coloring in the water.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I feel like the water is actually pretty clean.
It's clean.
Disney
it's
magic
not...
makes it look not as clean.
Yeah.
And then I had one other weird question. Have you ever taken a trip around the Jungle Cruise and maybe come to an attraction and say Bertha or one of your favorite Jungle Cruise animals is not behaving correctly? Maybe they're sleeping and they're not supposed to be sleeping, or they're not attacking the boat when they're supposed to. You know what I mean? They're not doing what they need to be doing. What has that ever happened to you? And what did you do to kind of like, I don't know,
deal with it,
deal with it, and like kind of just, oh, it's fine.
It's protecting the sleeping zebra.
Yeah, yeah. That's a real thing. I'm thinking like, what if the hippos aren't like coming up or something?
I had this one point, it's not very key detail, but one of the hyenas wasn't actually laughing. So I was like, oh, it must be playing the mannequin challenge.
Oh,
that's good. Because there was one time, was it when we went for it? I don't remember if it was when we went for D23 last year or when we went for Oogie Boogie Bash. But I rode the Jungle Cruise two separate days, and they must have been taking some of the villagers, you know, around and showing them more so than just their little camp. Because some of the figures or some of the villagers were not present one of the days I was there, and then I came back and did it the next time, and those villagers were back, but the other villagers were missing at that point. They also weren't dancing that day either, so they apparently...
I've seen, it seems like the one that I've seen the most not doing what they should be doing is the rhinos and the guys on the pole.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. That rhino does need a little help.
And well, together.
And the people on the pole need to work on their upper body strength a little bit. the ones down in Florida on that pole, they were a bit more fit. They pulled themselves up quite a bit higher.
Yeah.
They haven't been skipping their arm days.
So, Vetter, we know that you've worked at Disneyland now, but if you could, in your imagination, go back to work at Disneyland, let's pretend everything's back open and everything, and you could have any job, even a made-up one, in Disneyland, what would you do and why?
I would say ride engineers, because I've been fascinated in how the rides work in the inside. When you're a ride engineer, you kind of know the whole ride on the back of your hand. Before the pandemic, I was going to school for becoming an engineer, and I would have been one of those.
Perfect.
Not one of those. I would have liked to have been one of those.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool.
That, I mean, I also for a long time wanted to be an Imagineer, but I do not have nearly the engineering background. I know that Imagineers can have lots of different backgrounds. They can have story background. I don't know if podcast host and like IT tech support person really fits into the thing, but you sound like you're going through all the right steps to get there. Yeah, ride engineer would be super awesome, and they're really the unsung heroes, because mm-hmm. they're the ones that keep everything working. I know. When everything does get back open, they are going to be busy because
they're, yes, they're going to be in high demand.
In Disney World, they were saying that there was gremlins and all the things because they weren't even closed down that long, mm-hmm. but they were having all types of problems with their attractions. So it seems to me like something like the Jungle Cruise wouldn't have as much of a problem because you've just got the motor on each thing as opposed to something like Tower.
I don't know, those poor animals though, they've been on vacation now for a while.
True.
It might take a little extra magic to help get them looking their best and wake them back up again.
But, you know, I kind of do want to plug something.
Sure. Go for it.
That's okay. The cast member pantry, that really helps the cast members out right now.
Oh, yes.
You can find them
yes.
on social media platforms at the cast member pantry. It's, you know, you go in, it's like any on the shelter, you, like you donate stuff to them. And anything helps from, you know, just one can of beans or a whole case of beans. Like, it really helped.
Now, Vetter, for those of us that maybe aren't local and can't go and physically drop something off at the pantry, is there ways to do, like, monetary donations or to send donation, you know, mail-in donations, that sort of thing?
You could do sort of like a GoFundMe. There should be a link.
Well, I'm sorry that you're one of those folks that unfortunately, well, were furloughed for so long and then have been laid off. So I know that you're not alone. And so, of course, anybody in our community who can, please definitely make some donations to either the cast member pantry or send some type of financial contribution if you can, because these people that help create our joy every time we're at the Disney parks definitely yeah. need some joy in their life right now.
Well, it's also very good to hear from someone that knows, because mm-hmm. I've seen that there's been different places for people to go and donate and provide whatever help and support that they can for cast members. So it's really good to hear from someone that knows it, because it's one of those things, you always hope that these things that you're donating to go to what you're intending for it to go to. So it's really good to know that this is a good place to donate. It's very, you know, very genuine, and that it's actually making a difference for cast members. So thank you very much for sharing that and for pointing that out.
It's actually run by cast members. And so, you know, these cast members are like, hey, might as well just help our brothers and sisters who were also affected by the pandemic.
Very, very cool. So for those of you, I did just do a quick search. They do have a Facebook page, Cast Member Pantry, and there is an email address if you want to contact them directly. Otherwise, you can contact them through the Facebook page if you're looking. Quick glance here, I'm not seeing something obvious to do a monetary donation, but I'm sure.
We'll put a link in the show notes, too, to this Facebook page so people can find it easier.
Very cool. Thank you for that, Vetter.
Yes, thank you, Vetter. Thank you for coming on and sharing your time with us, especially when there's just all the craziness going on. And we hope that that things will open and return to normal sooner rather than later and can get you back to work. And hopefully you can become your resistance person that you wanted to be, and even better, hopefully get back to school so you can become an Imagineer in the future, because it'd be awesome to say, we knew Vetter when he was just a Jungle Cruise skipper. He was on our podcast. So thank you so much.
Thank you guys for having me. No, this is, you know, a little spark of joy. I know you guys, your podcast is a spark of joy for people who, you know, can't go to the parks right now, and people like me who, you know, don't have a job right now.
You guys all bring joy to our life too. And of course, talking to you tonight was also a joy. So thank you. Thank you.
Very quick too. I was just looking. We'll link this in here. WDWinfo.com did a really nice write-up on the Cast Member Pantry. They do have an Amazon wish list as well. So that'd be another way for you to donate too.
Awesome. Well, now it's time to return to Trivia Land with producer Vern to get the answers to this week's trivia, because we certainly didn't have the answers to this week's trivia. And thank you again to Chris Y, Sam S, Joy B, Liberty M, and Lee S for the questions, even though we don't know anything.
Yes, thank you very much to our listeners who always take such good care of us and send us in awesome questions that are certainly good at stumping them this week.
The tradition continues.
Yes. Our very first question that we started off with tonight, submitted by listener Chris Wide. In 1988, Big Thunder Ranch was home to a very special animal. Who was it? You guessed an armadillo or a pardoned turkey, but the listeners in the chat got it right with Mickey Moo, a cow with a natural Mickey head on it.
Mickey Moo. They even had a special name for the cow.
Of course.
That's great.
Your second question, submitted by listener Samuel S. When guests enter the Haunted Mansion elevator stretching room and foolish mortals receive a self-introduction from their ghost host, what is the name of the TV and movie character voice actor who lent his voice for this role? You guessed Vincent Price or Thurl Ravenscroft, but the listeners got it right with Laura saying Paul Frees.
Can we just say the listeners are amazing in the chat
tonight?
They're
doing great with trivia. They need to take over.
Yes.
They send the best trivia. They know the answers to the best trivia. The listeners are just awesome.
They are.
We've educated them well, apparently.
So well that we've forgotten it all ourselves.
Yes.
Your third regular question, submitted by listener Joy B. Which ride at Disneyland Park usually has the most riders per day? I was trying to trick you by saying usually, putting the extra emphasis on there, but you were too smart for that one. It is Small World.
Woo! Yay!
Yes. One.
Hope. We're making a comeback, Tag.
One.
Wrong studio.
Your fourth regular question from listener Liberty M. The home decor shop on Buena Vista Street at DCA, Julius Katz and Sons, was inspired by what cartoon comedy series? It was not the Silly Symphonies. It was Julius the Cat from the Alice comedies.
Oh.
Somebody said that in the chat.
We did.
Julius Katz and Sons.
You know, it actually, when you just reread the question, you said, like, comedy series, it's the Alice comedies. I was so stuck on the fact that it was a live-action actress, though. So I didn't count it as a cartoon in my head.
Oh, well.
Yeah. Again, good job, listeners.
So we're 1 for 4 so far.
And your bonus question, submitted by listener Lee S. What happened to the letters that spelled California that used to sit in front of DCA from 2001 to 2011? And you got it right away with they are now at the California State Fairgrounds.
So the bonus actually helped with the
Thank
bonus.
Thank goodness.
So 2 out of 5.
Yes.
Not a very good average.
No. I think our average has been going down.
Yeah. Well, thank you again to Chris Y, Sam S, Joy B, Liberty M, and Lee S for your stumper questions.
Well, listeners, how do you think they did? How did Terrible. You do listening at home? Do you think you've got what it takes to send us some great stumpers? If you've got some good ones, feel free to send those in to us at trivia@dlweekly.net.
I can also say if you have some nice, easy ones because you'd like to see the hosts actually succeed for once, you can also send those in.
Well, we will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
Until then, have courage, be kind, and spread some Disney magic.
Ladies and gentlemen, Disneyland has now ended its normal operating day. We hope you've enjoyed your visit to the Magic Kingdom and that you'll be back with us again soon.